welcome back to another episode of Talking Touring with me, Craig Leach, and the beautiful Liam Sexton. First things first, thank you so much for coming back and hanging out with us. It's a pleasure to have you here. We welcome each and every one of you. This week, we've got a super special guest, someone that I was lucky enough to meet on tour whilst with Anti-Flag, and we managed to share a bus, and we got to hang out a lot and spend a lot of time, and I learned a lot from this man. We have Mr. Danny Harvey, one of the nicest people in the music industry, in my opinion. He is top jaw, absolute top lad, is currently doing a huge amount of work with Silverstein, Beartooth. He works with Tandem Management, who probably have some of the best bands in the world that they look after. And he's also the half of the brains behind Sonic Workshops. So please go and check that out and support that. It's a really good idea, the way that it's kind of taking masterclasses to a new level where you can really tailor like which areas of the music industry you want to learn. So we fully support Sonic Workshops. It's fucking awesome. Danny's also the person that you may have seen on my Instagram way back when, a picture of me absolutely destroying a man whilst we were both shirtless in front of an audience of our peers whilst having an arm wrestle. So we talk about how Danny has managed to recover from that. But all in all, it was so fun to hang out with Danny, and I really hope you guys enjoy this episode as much as we did. This is episode 12 with Danny Harvey.
Liam Sexton.
Danny bloody Harvey. Show us your face. Yeah.
There he is.
How are you both?
Very good, mate. Very good indeed. How are you?
Yeah, trying to stay busy, trying to stay productive.
Yeah, what's the secret to that with you at the moment?
That Sonic Workshop stuff's keeping me busy, which is good.
Amazing.
We moved house in November.
I did see that. Congratulations. You purchased, did you not?
We did.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it was a very, very strange time to actually purchase a house. But to be fair, we had an offer and everything accepted before lockdown, which fell through.
Yeah. Oh, fuck.
Of course.
And then obviously we went looking again when it was open again in July, was it?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And moved in November. So, yeah.
Hey, congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
Well, first things first, Danny Harvey, thank you for joining us on Talking Touring, the best podcast about touring that's ever existed, and that is not to be debated by anyone. Hello and welcome. How does it feel to be part of this?
It feels great to be part of history.
You damn right it is.
A massive part of history, might I add.
I mean, if you're happy with it, we're just going to dive straight in and just start firing
Absolutely,
questions.
Yeah.
So, let's start off easy. How did you get into touring? Give us a bit of background.
Yeah. I went to university to study music production in Brighton. I always wanted to do studio work. And then after uni, I guess I needed to make some money, and there was nothing on studio work kind of available, and I still didn't want to do anything like a 9-to-5 or go and work. I worked in Subway when I was like 16. I was like, I'm not going anything back to that.
Yeah, no.
Ended up doing like crew work, like pushing some boxes around like Brighton Dome and Brighton Centre.
It's a good way to start.
Shadowed some friends doing live sound and kind of picked it up quite quick.
Have you got the hang of that yet?
No. rude, Craig.
Sorry.
You ever done Green Door Store in Brighton?
Yes, yep. What a fucking place.
Oh, so I was in-house there for like 5 years.
Is there even a desk in that venue?
Say that again.
Is there even a desk in that venue? It doesn't seem like it's big
LS9,
enough.
So no.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's an LS9, doesn't count.
Yeah. But I learned a bunch there, met a bunch of people coming through, tried to network as much as possible, and then ended up meeting a guy called Steve Muncaster. I don't know if you...
I know who he is. I've never met him, but I know his name.
Yeah, so he was with Set Your Goals at the time, and they were looking for an in-front-of-house guy and merch. My first tour was doing merch as well, so I went out with them.
I was going to say, that definitely isn't a dual role, front-of-house and merch.
Well, it wasn't fun. It was, yeah, a lot. You can't really do merch and anything else. Yeah.
No, it's fucking well off.
Such a full-on, yeah. And the show, it was Every Time I Die headline, Cancer Bats Main Support and Set Your Goals. So it wasn't like small shows. Yeah. And they're doing merch and then running to the death and then running back, because obviously after the show, everyone wants to go and buy merch.
Oh, shit,
and
it actually was a dual role. Like you were doing front of house and merch. What the fuck? Yeah. That's insane.
But I didn't get paid either, but that was my own choice. Yeah.
Jesus.
Is that where you met Cancer Bats? Because we had Jay on last week, and Jay was talking about Green Door Store as well, but he didn't actually mention that that's where you guys met.
We didn't meet at Green Door. We met on that tour.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And then I think not even 6 months after that, they asked me to come out with them.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And that was a dream. That was just mixing.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, this is what
I bet it was a fucking dream after merch and front of house. I can imagine with that tour as well, with those bands and that genre of music, that wasn't like, you know, a couple of hundred quid a night. That was probably some serious fucking cash going through that.
I guess at the time, I didn't know any different.
Yeah, I suppose.
So I was just kind of went with it and had drinks every night and just kind of fit in with everyone. Like a bit of, not party, obviously, because I was there. I wanted to impress, obviously, to continue my career doing that. Yeah. But
yeah, but I guess there is, like, you have to, you've got to work, like, for want of a better term, you've got to worm your way in a little bit with some socialising and a bit of partying.
Exactly. I think I've heard it a couple of times and I've said it to people, go for a drink with them. That's your best way to socialise. Yeah. Get out of that work environment and go, and that's what I did.
Yeah. You want to try and get, like, at least one good little inside joke in there in the first few days, I always think. Like, if you get a little inside joke that you can keep running on for the rest of the tour, you're solid, I think.
Did you get away with saying friends. Work hard, play hard? Or is that just...
No. Yeah, you could.
I guess so, yeah. I guess so.
Amazing. Well, so obviously, aside from being tour management and front of house and doing that journey, you work with Tandem. Tandem, are you still with Tandem Management?
I am, yeah, definitely.
Possibly the greatest roster of artists in the world, in my opinion. And how did you get into that? Because obviously Paul from Silverstein's part of that, who's one of your big, big clients. And did he kind of bring you into that, or did you meet Paul through Tandem?
No, so I toured with Silverstein for like, I think it's been like 5-6 years. I guess last year or the year before now would be the first time in that time I kind of strayed away from it a little.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he'd always managed the band, just on his own back, on his own, no company as such. Mm-hmm. And obviously being TM, worked very closely with him and all of that kind of side of things. And then he started the company with a guy called Rich, who does Protest the Hero, Seaway. Mm-hmm. So he ran a label in Canada called New Damage, which was like a side of Dynalone, which was Alexis on Fire kind of thing. So he knew that side, and then him and Paul went together to create Tandem, hence the two people Tandem.
Yeah.
And
very clever.
I kind of just asked Paul if I could help, learn, assist, kind of all that. And then I was kind of helping unofficially, I guess. And then Rich was like, hey, we're going to give you an email.
Yeah.
Which was like a big, like,
official.
That sounds pretty professional. And then Rich approached me and was like, do you want to do some bands together? So I kind of did some bands with him, and then I've taken on some bands of my own now.
Amazing.
And kind of just, yeah.
So you just basically love to work 24/7, it seems.
I do. It's weird, because when I was a kid, I didn't. I think my dad once said to me, he goes, I'm proud of you that you got up on the sofa and you've done some work. And now I do like it.
Now you don't
stop.
It just
keeps the brain active too, doesn't it?
It does, yeah, it does. Like I've started working in some artist management as well. Over the last year, and it's, you know, it's been a blessing, because obviously of everything that's happened in the world, but it is good. Just it engages your brain in a different way, and you learn a lot more about the industry, I think, by being on that side of the fence.
Yeah, I always looked at it as a way out of touring when I'm too old to. Like, I still want to be involved in the music industry always, but I don't want to tour when I'm 50 and I'm have a family or whatever.
Don't want to be a grizzled old road dog.
Yeah. Exactly. There's nothing wrong with that. Anyone else? Yeah. There's
nothing wrong with it. Absolutely not. Well, just staying on Tandem for a second. Tandem, like a lot of the people in Tandem have their bands on the label as well. Is it quite a DIY run management company, or is it very, very corporate and serious?
Oh, no, it's completely DIY. I think every manager on there is either in a band or was in a band or was crew for a band. Like, it's also, they know that side of it.
Yeah,
so I feel a lot of managements are suit and tie, aren't they? No, you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely like that.
Nothing wrong with that, but that's just the way Tandem have gone with everyone. Because, yeah, like Strayer on there and Tom. Jesse from Stick to Your Guns is on there.
Unity TX, man. I love that band. They're so fucking good.
Oh, that's cool.
I love that. Right, so moving away from Tandem there, like, this is a very fast-paced show, so they're coming at you thick and fast, my buddy. your gear affiliations with Alan and Heath, is that long-lived love of the brand, or is that mainly from being like a local chap that had a relationship that's managed to blossom over the years as your career has progressed?
Yeah, so I guess until I started working for Beartooth, I guess maybe 2 years ago now, and that was the first band that kind of been like, we have a budget, and I had the time. Mm-hmm. With Silverstein, as you know, TM Front House, you don't always have the time to take a console out. And I was just mixing. They were like, you can take a console out. And I was like, cool, these D-Lives are great. I'll just message Alan and Heath and kind of start that conversation.
Yeah.
I think I just was introed by someone. I can't remember who it was. Maybe Chris Pollock. Do you know Chris? He does ABR, August Burns Red.
I don't know if I know the name.
No.
Anyway, and then weirdly enough, so a guy called Leon, who was their like live rep in the UK.
Yeah.
I went to school with his daughter.
Oh,
no way. So, not that that was a way in, but it was like a nice introduction and a conversation. Say, hey, I remember actually coming to your house as a 13-year-old.
No way. Such a small world when things like that come.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
And then he CC'd me to like their like PR team, I guess, which is where like a couple of posts they put out about me. And then Beartooth bought a console in America.
Oh,
so that kind of
good idea.
Put me in contact with the American team, which is a guy called Mike Bangs.
That's a great name. What a fucking great name.
When I was CC'd with him, I was like, you got a good name.
That's amazing.
It's not real. It's just, again, it's a little bit of who you know and obviously being from Cornwall and they're from Cornwall.
I think it's amazing how easy it is sometimes to get these connections and get, you know, endorsements and that sort of thing from these companies, because it usually is just as simple as taking a chance, dropping an email, just asking the question, and 9 times out of 10, you'll get a reply, and you can build a relationship from that. You might not get something straight away, but you're on the radar and you start working, and they see you a lot more, and you get a bit more reputation with that company. It's amazing.
Yeah, definitely. And even if you don't get a response on that email, you're no worse off than you were.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not the end of the world, is it? I think it's the same with artists as well. You know, with getting endorsements for like, you know, drum kits and guitars and amps and things as well. It's exactly the same situation, that you just have a conversation with someone, and hopefully, if you've got enough about you to back it up, you get what you need. That's it.
Yeah,
it's great.
Exactly. Yeah, hopefully it benefits both parties, isn't it? That's the
exactly
whole point.
Exactly. I mean, like, especially in like that genre of like heavy, like hardcore and punk and stuff, like Orange absolutely fucking clean up with everyone in that genre. Big because fan. Like everyone fucking uses Orange, and it makes them look so much better, because every single time you go to a hardcore show, all you see on stage is Orange amps. That's it.
Yeah, I have always wondered how much money they actually make directly linked to endorsements, though, a company like that. Like, you're right, you see them everywhere, but I'd love to see the actual sales figures to be like, well, at Download, when we had £60,000 worth of amps, we got like 2 sales. Or I wonder if it is comparable, kind of thing.
I don't even know how you'd like monitor that kind of data, to be honest. How could you say where it was directly influenced from? I don't know. I guess it's probably, as long as it's in the public eye, it's just branding. Isn't it? That's
well, if anyone out there does know, do let us know at talkingtouring@gmail.com.
We're also still waiting for someone from Orange to explain to us what the squiggly line is on one of their amps that Jay brought up on last week's episode. So if they could get in touch, that'd be great.
Yeah, what it means, is there a meaning behind
it? Yeah, I mean, we were talking about like how good, like with Orange amps, they have the very like basic symbolism, like the bass is a bass clef, middle is two arrows pointing to the middle. And then Jay brought up that he has an amp and he was like, I don't know what the fuck this line means on it. And he was trying to explain to Justin from Antiflag that he had no fucking clue what it meant. And so we're waiting for someone from Orange to get in touch and tell us what I'm that is.
It's weird, isn't it? Little things like that. And all my mic can think about. What the hell does that mean?
Yeah. Mad. Absolutely
so you were
mad.
Saying about you've never toured a desk as a TM front of house. Is that's what you said, right?
I have on a co-headliner.
Mm-hmm.
So someone else was sharing the console with me, but yeah. I don't know if I have
Would you prefer to tour a desk or not? In a just front of house capacity and in a TM front of house. If you had like the band signed off on it, it wasn't going to cost them anything or anything. What would you prefer?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Just for ease, consistency. I'd improve my mix as I go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it makes life, I'm not even a sound engineer, but it makes life so much fucking easier. Even as the TM, when you're just TMing, you know that like sound check is going to be cut in half. At least because like everything's done a lot of the time, you know, if you've got like a virtual rig as well, you can do virtual sound checks. The band don't even need to fucking be there. It's fantastic. Yeah. I love it.
I think maybe my first like being like TM front of house and not getting one was like just me being a bit, I've never taken a concert. That seems like a lot more work. I don't really have the time and then never did it. But maybe now thinking back, it would be more time for me.
It is delightful. I always like watching front of house engineers when they're touring a desk come into the venue and be like, move that out of the way, get rid of that's in there. Yeah. In there, I've got my own coming in. My A2 will be in a second to set it up. I'll see you in a couple of hours with a coffee. Bye.
That's
the dream.
My favorite
is when the console's in the balcony. Yeah. Put me on the floor.
One of my things with touring, though, is I love, and I think it's what's made me a better engineer over the years, because I am a great engineer, obviously, for those that don't know, has been using house consoles around the world. Like, you don't get a chance to learn unless you, like, I've toured consoles before, and it's been really good, but then it's almost too easy sometimes. Like, that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. I definitely learned a lot from jumping on a Digico and being like, what the hell do I do with this?
And then a house tech shows you. I mean, I learned stuff from you when we were on tour together where you were like, well, why don't you try doing this? And it was like, oh, yeah, that sounds better. And I think it's a nice way to learn stuff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, throw yourself in the deep end as such of a console that and then you can apply what you learn on that console on another console, and then you just improve as you...
It is great, but then from the other side, I had, year before, I was out with Idols over the summer. We were doing a lot of, like, high-up festival slots or headline festival slots, and we weren't touring a desk at all. Like, I didn't have a desk for any of the shows whatsoever. And our front of house engineer, Wiz, every day would be like, come and look how far back I am in this tent. Look at all these other guys who've got their own desk. Look, like, why have I not got my own desk? I'm so far back in this tent. And my argument every day was like, yeah, but Wiz, you've worked on every single desk. You have a show file for every single desk that we've come across. And whenever you come across a desk that you haven't used, you make a show file. So why the fuck are we going to get a desk when you know how to use every single one?
Yeah. He's his own worst enemy.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely get that. But then at a festival, it also takes that pressure off, doesn't it? You've got the console and you've got the comfortable, you know everything. You can patch your own stage at that point, maybe, if you've got your own line system. Yeah. All that is definitely like...
I remember.
Maybe I was just being a bit too mean.
Yeah, you're too tight with those budget strings, man. With Antiflag once, we did a headline in, I think it was Mighty Sounds Festival, and it was one of those where everyone was super excited, huge amount of people, we were headlining, awesome, and then I walked up to this battered old Digico, and I remember it just not being a fun show, and just having to be to the band at that point, just be like, boys, like, when we're getting paid the money to go and do these things, let's just invest in doing it better. And I think they needed to see it from both sides as well, because it was like, they don't want to spend the money, which I get, but it does make the all-round experience a damn sight better having a console at times. especially festival. Fucking hell, you turned on my decision.
Big time. There's certain, yeah. There's certain consoles that you just don't want to walk up on. Like a Digico. They sound fantastic, yeah, but they're not a fun console to walk up to.
No.
Like in a festival pack situation, and they're so, I find them very fiddly.
I think Craig's dying a little bit in the corner here. Huh? Honestly, Craig, it just looked like you were throwing up onto the floor just then.
I was a little concerned.
Yeah, I was like, he's muted himself, and is he puking?
I was delicately trying to cough.
Did like what I said. I'm
touring desks, unbelievable.
Furious at that statement about Digico desks.
Yeah.
I will not sit here and listen to you slag them off. No, I'm joking. A lot of your bands take you over to the States all the time, and you're probably just as much in the States and around the world than you are in the UK and Europe. And would you rather indefinitely tour the States or UK and Europe if you had to make a decision?
Right, one or the other, that's a hard question.
It's really difficult, isn't it?
I guess it depends what time of year. Is that allowed?
Yeah.
Is that a question? Totally. But I guess you would be all year if you were in.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you had to do a maybe campaign. America? Yeah.
Maybe US.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd probably agree with you, to be honest. Yeah.
Not that I don't like Europe. I love touring Europe too. Yeah. Like it's just harder.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's a different world in the US as well. Like the way the shows work, and even down to like how like the settlements work for a show is a completely different system. Like they have the points-based system for overages and things, which is really odd.
It makes sense.
Yeah, it's really, like, it totally makes sense. But at first you're like, oh, what the fuck are you talking about points? I don't get it, but it does make sense. I think I'd agree with you. Yeah. I mean, there's something special about America when you first start touring there. Because I don't know if it was the same for you, but it feels, when I first went there, it felt like I'd made it a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I know what you mean. I guess it would be the same for Americans coming over here and touring for the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I guess you wouldn't get the culture differences. Like, I do like going to different places in Europe and seeing the different cultures. And obviously the cities are a lot more vastly different in a way than America, even though America is different. Like New York and LA, you couldn't really get that much different, really.
But no, yeah, they are very different. But I mean, I know what you mean, though. It's like there are some differences, but you're going to find an Applebee's in both of these places.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a great way to explain it. Yeah.
Where would you rather be, though? Romania, like some shitty venue in Romania, or some shitty venue in Salt Lake City? If there is even a venue in Salt Lake City, I don't know.
There is. That is a hard question for Salt Lake. It's really bad.
We got stuck in Salt Lake City for how long, Craig? Seven hours at the airport. And it's you must know it's a dry county.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the airport isn't. Fucking hell, it was savage. But
Danny, like Liam's got plenty of experience in airports, but he decided to go out for a cigarette and left his passport with me inside the airport. So we then had to go. You called me, and which is
what's really annoying.
I'm not allowed back in the airport.
Is I'd taken one step past the security officer at the gate, one step past, and I'd like said to him, "Like, am I right to go to smoke?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure." I took one step past and realised I have a passport. Turned around and he went, "You can't go back in." Are you fucking kidding me? Like, I've not got anywhere. I'm still in front of you, you fucking idiot. It was a nightmare.
That's so annoying. That wouldn't happen in Romania.
Yeah,
that's
exactly. It wouldn't happen in Romania.
Oh, brilliant. Beartooth, you've been with them 2 years, you say. So in the last 2 years, I guess, yeah, they've grown exponentially. And you must have been there for some pretty pivotal parts of that growth. Is there a point that you can remember on a tour where you were just like, oh, fucking hell, like all this hard work that I've seen the boys doing and that you've all put into it as a team was really starting to pay off?
Yeah, I guess the first tour I did with them was Architects in UK. So like Wembley Arena was like a huge...
Wow.
Like, watch it. And I've known the Beartooth guys for a good 5 or 6 years before touring with them, I guess. So I've seen all that hard work, and they supported Silverstein. I've seen them play Warped Tour on smaller stages, so I've seen that growth. So yeah, Wembley was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And then we did Columbus, which is their hometown, in their stadium.
No Fuck, way. Amazing.
Yeah, with System closing that day, and I was just like, this is wild.
Yeah. But, that's insane.
Headlining Roundhouse too, which was actually a year ago, like today pretty much.
No way.
How do you find Roundhouse to mix in?
I really enjoyed that show, but I've mixed before. It was weird. With Cancer Bats, we did two nights in a row there supporting Enter Shikari.
Yeah.
And I had a great night one night and a horrible night the other. Really? And I did not understand.
Yeah.
I was like, two nights back to back, how could it be so different?
Yeah. But it's tough in there, I find. Like last time I was there, I was with Postmodern Jukebox, who are like a softer, jazzy band. And I thought it sounded great. And then the agent decided to walk down. So he was like, you know, when you can go on the balcony that's just like behind the PA. He was stood there and goes, can't hear it from over there. Like, can you do something about it? And I was just like, I'm going to fucking throw this console at you if you're that much of a knob. I couldn't believe it. And that really tainted my whole experience of it. Just this one guy being like, there's no coverage over there. I was like, yeah, fucking no.
I get that. Like, I've had someone like at a front row of a show be like, I can't hear the vocal. And you're like, well, you're stood.
Yeah.
The PA is not pointing at you in any way. And it ruined the whole show for me.
Yeah. And it like, gets in your head.
I thought I had a great mix, but this one guy didn't like it. And I had a horrible show.
5,000 happy faces, but one miserable idiot.
Yeah.
That's a good question, actually. How often do you have like a fucking backseat mixer come up and talk to you during or after the show?
So what's quite funny with Beartooth is Caleb, I don't know how much you know about them.
Not loads.
Okay, so he is everything in that band recording-wise. He plays everything. Okay.
Caleb from Attack Attack.
He mixes everything. He is old Attack Attack. Yeah. He mixes everything, produces everything. I think he does everything on the record but masters.
Fuck, wow.
So he knows his way around the console. He knows sound. He does the monitors. I'll set it up every day, but he'll go over and set everyone's mixes.
Shit.
So
that's amazing.
In a way, he is my biggest backseat mixer.
Oh, shit.
He'll come to the floor and listen and either give me a thumbs up, which is majority of the time, which is great and why I've still got the job, I guess. But sometimes would come and be like, whoa, what's going on with that snare today? Or this room sounds interesting or stuff like that, which is good because it definitely pushes me.
Yeah.
But he's definitely that backseat mixer at that point.
That's a lot of pressure.
It is, yeah. Again, I've known them for so long, which helps.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
It's the room. There's nothing I could do. Look at it. Clap my hands. Hear about 5 hands around the room. I'd be like, what do you want me to do?
That's a shame because I bet the standard, like the old standard sound guy reply of, it will sound better when people are in the room, doesn't really fly with him.
I still say it though.
Yeah, I bet.
Amazing. Sonic Workshops. Can you tell us a bit about Sonic Workshops, how that came about, how it's been received?
Yeah, so Sonic Workshops is a platform or online about helping individuals that want to know about the music industry. And it's all done over Zoom, one-to-one sessions. And it kind of came about with a guy called George, who we co-founded it together. He is a production manager of the university in Brighton called Water Bear,
which is
started from a guy that started BIM or something to do with BIM, but left BIM to start this.
It's also in a band. I can't remember what they're called.
He was in a band. I can't
color,
remember.
Color of Sound.
Maybe. That rings a bell. Yeah.
Oh, fuck. I've toured with them.
We went on with them in Towson. Sorry, Danny. Carry on.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I know exactly who you mean.
Bruce.
Yes. Bruce. Yeah.
And he was talking about like starting a label. And he wanted some advice. And I was like, I don't know that much about labels, but I can tell you who can, but I can give you advice in a manager side of it. And it all just kind of back and forth like that. And we kind of went, there's a service here as such. There's like something that we could offer other people that want to know this.
Mm-hmm.
Like one person isn't going to know everything, but if we get a bunch of different mentors, we can teach different aspects. So it started with just 6 of us. Huh? And now there's like over 20.
Amazing.
Like Scope, Katzenbach is on there doing guitar lessons. Then he can also like mastering because he like does that now. Mm-hmm. Paul Mark from Silverstein is on there to help with like songwriting stuff.
Amazing. I think the website's great, and I've looked through it a few times just trying to go, well, I'd love to do something, one of the courses, and I will at some point in the near future, definitely.
So is it like a case of you kind of pick and mix, like what you want to learn about, and then you sort of essentially create your own curriculum in a way?
Yeah, so we've set some courses up that kind of structure it for you. So I have a TM course up there that's kind of structured if you want to learn about that. Alex, do you know Alex? He does monitors for Dua Lipa, and he used to do Two Door Cinema Club, Mumford and Sons.
I probably would by
probably
face.
Met him backstage somewhere, but...
You must have. So he has a monitor course on there that is just structured in that way, like setting out your console, doing your in-ears and stuff. But the idea, I guess, is to just... whatever they want, as you say, structure their own thing, like mentor them into whatever thing they're missing in their knowledge or they want to learn about or they want to know how to get on tour. Like, I can't tell them the answers, but I can help them. I point them in the right direction. If there's anything that they're missing, kind of direct them that way.
Amazing.
We've got a few universities interested. So helping them, like MA students even, which is great. Chatty involved that they pay us to a little bit. It's like a discounted rate, obviously, because it's a charity, but we still need to. And then they have some people that they come through their charity that want to learn certain bits. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of the mentor for that charity. It's called Paper Arms, I think it's
Paper
called.
Arms.
Yeah.
That's really fucking cool. Do you find that you have like a lot of individuals, or is there like some bands that come to you as a collective as well? Because it seems like it's something that would be good for that.
Yeah, a bit of both, to be honest. There's a couple of bands that come on and just want and advise how to release a song, or they don't even may not know how to put it onto Spotify.
Yeah,
and kind of just tell them that there's like different platforms that you can use to put it on, or social media. Do we have a guy called Jar who does Beartooth photography, video, social media? He actually gets a lot of just people want to sort their social medias out. They want to grow that and they want to start their business kind of that way. Hopefully is a thing, Craig, that I want to get you involved in, you're saying, is when touring starts again, hold workshops at shows.
Yes, such a good idea.
So have someone that's interested in mixing, someone that's just have maybe not many, maybe just one person a show. Like if when it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
If it's there as such, and then they come watch you sound check.
It's a great idea.
Settle a show. How obviously you run it through the band and all.
Yeah. It's such a good idea because that's so simple to organize, really. That takes, like a phone call and like two emails to be able to get someone to come to a gig in the afternoon and watch a sound check and talk to you for, 20 minutes afterwards and pick your brain. It's not a lot.
Yeah, not at all.
It's amazing.
And I wish that was there when I wanted to start.
Same.
Like, I would jump on that.
Absolutely,
As a tour manager.
I wish I'd known that. Like,
as a tour manager, it'd be really nice just to break your day up a little bit with someone to talk to.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Someone who's not just asking you what the Wi-Fi password is 50 fucking times.
It's written on the sheet.
My favourite one that I've had in the past is someone asked me what time they were on stage while looking at the fucking day sheet.
Oh.
And we both stood next to the day sheet and he went, "What time are we on?" I was like, "Are you fucking joking? All right, see this that you're looking at."
I put hours of work into. I'm not going to name any names. They were late for something. I can't remember what it was, an interview or prep or VIP or something.
Yeah.
And they said, if only there was like something that would tell me the times every day, like a sheet. And I was like, are you serious? I hope he was joking.
Yeah.
I like putting up dud day sheets.
So. How do you feel about Master Tour, actually? I saw that was coming up in the touring crew today, people talking about Master Tour and is it worth it? You know, do you like it? Do you not? Do you use it?
I don't, but I like it. I don't know why I don't. But there's nothing. I think it's really good if you're multiple vehicles on a tour. So if you're obviously like a big tour with lots of buses and trucks, or even if you're like kind of what we did, Craig, with that Europe tour, worked really well. So we're all on the same schedule. We were sharing buses and stuff. That kind of worked well. So it depends on each scenario, I guess.
See, I love it. I absolutely swear by it. But I think it's just for me, the workflow of having everything in one space works really well. And having that, like, especially with like the newer version of it now, where it does like fucking everything. So you can send out like push notification alerts to like certain groups on the tour. So you can like group everyone in the crew and then everyone in the band and send them push notifications when you update really stuff, good. Which is cool. And they'll give you like local weather, local routes and maps and everything, which is great. But yeah, it definitely leans towards big production, particularly big production US tours, I think. For sure.
Yeah. The guest listing on it is great too. So just be good. Able to click guest list and like takes any hassle out. Yeah.
So good.
I do like it. I don't know why I don't use it, to be honest.
Yeah, I swear by it. I couldn't use anything else now. What do you use now? Did you just do like a calendar and share it out to
just
everyone?
Old school schedule thing, day sheets I print out every day, just like a tour book. And then
nice.
Guest list, I did a shared note, which is kind of just master tour anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
And then I added in, or I used to do a book, like an actual guest list book on the...
The Book of Lies.
Yes, Book of Lies.
I remember doing a tour with one of them once and being like, everything is about 3 weeks old on this. Why am I even holding this? Like, we're not even doing this show anymore, let alone this city.
The venues change, the bands change. I remember doing a whole tour book and I spelled Silverstein wrong.
Oh,
and it printed out
every page.
I was like, no.
That's amazing. Oh, mate. Thinking about that tour that you were just mentioned when we got to ride together on the bus, I loved that tour because not only because I got to meet you, the Cancer Bats, and like the Silverstein boys, but I got to work closely with another tour manager that I respected and knew was busy as well. And I wonder, do you even with Sonic Workshops, do you still find yourself learning from all these tour managers and front house engineers? Or are you kind of just, you want to stick with the way you know it works? Or like a lot of old road dogs just do it like they did and what worked and they just stick with it. But do you think the Danny Harvey experience will always be moving with the time, or do you think it is what it is now?
I mean, I guess to answer your first one, I definitely will learn from other people, like see the way they're doing something and either take that on board or be like, oh, maybe I don't like that and I'll carry on doing this way, but I'll definitely want to learn. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like even when I'm doing my Sonic Workshop stuff and talking about tour management stuff, things like come into my head and be like, why haven't I done that before?
Yeah.
I'm like learning as I even talk it out. So I guess it will change over time. Everything, it has to, doesn't it?
It has to evolve to an extent, but the cause of the way we all do our jobs.
I mean, definitely, like, even just like Master Tour, I think I would change to Master Tour in the long run.
Yeah.
So that's a big change, I guess, because I've never before in like, in 5-6 years.
It is amazing, like the little things that you pick up from other people while you're working. And like one thing that I picked up that just after I did it seemed like the most obvious thing in the fucking world to me, but I hadn't done it before, was festival sites. If you're on a bus in the morning, obviously usually as the TM, you're the first one up, go and get accreditation and everything else, bring it all back, is sticking on the pin board or on the door or whatever, a map of the site with your bus here, and then arrows drawing towards like dressing rooms and everything else, or even a video I've seen, you know, film the walk there and send it to the whole group. It's just so simple.
Simple things, but so good. Yeah. The map, I don't know why I've never done that.
I've never done that.
Yeah. I've done a map to crap. So the first thing you do is you want to go to the toilet. Here it is. That's as far as I've got before, I think.
That map, I love that. That's brilliant.
But yeah, it's just little things like that you pick up along the way from other people that you're just like, ah, fuck, that's so easy and so good.
One thing that I picked up from someone is that today and tomorrow, day sheet. So you can see tomorrow's day sheet.
Such a good idea.
And then you know what time you're loading in and you know everything that's happening tomorrow. And then obviously the next day you just move that one and print the next one up.
Yeah.
Again, that's where Master Tour just beats that out of the because it's all there for you anyway.
Oh, yeah. I still find that even with Master Tour, I'm printing out day sheets quite a lot to stick up in places.
You just fucking love your printer, though, Liam.
I do love my printer. Absolutely love my printer.
You're the first person I've ever met that loves printers. I hate printers.
It's so useful. So useful. But yeah, I print them all the time.
They never work.
I mean, my like IP10 or 110 even, sorry, is battered. Like, the side panel is missing. When you turn it on, it takes about 15 minutes before it even prints anything. And like, whenever I'm sharing a production office with someone, they're like, is that thing all right? Is that going to fucking explode? Sounds ridiculous. But yeah, I tend to print them out still.
I tell you what, let's... but I was going to say, we're going to move on to our talking touring questions, which are Liam's favourite, because this is where we just guarantee dead air in the eternal quest for dead air whilst people think about their answers.
I always ask Craig to fucking brief people on these questions first, because some of them are quite hard. So I hope he has. Has he briefed you?
He has, but I didn't look at them. I wanted to.
Excellent.
I didn't look at them. I did. I can't remember what I thought about, but I did.
Oh, yeah. The top five venues, mate. To work in, tour in, visit, to go to a show in, anything, but top five worldwide.
Yeah, that is a hard one.
And you can include festivals as well. It's really fucking difficult.
Oh, festivals as well? Yep. Oh, now we get the dead end. Coco, I want to say Coco, because I do love that venue. Like, it's not there anymore, right? Obviously, it had that fire.
It's still there, but they did have the fire. As far as I'm aware, it's still in repair.
Oh, so it will be a venue again?
As far as I'm aware, I haven't heard anything to the contrary, but you know, it seems very suspicious that a venue that had been closed for such a long period of time had a sudden fire while it was empty.
Second one, Wiesbaden. Is it slacked off?
Yeah.
It's because I beat Craig in an arm wrestle there, so that's my favorite.
No.
I've heard a different ending to this story.
I wrote down a question. I'm gonna just throw it out there right now, okay? Losing a shirtless arm wrestle in front of an audience of our peers must have been quite damaging to your reputation. How have you recovered from such a shame?
I haven't recovered. I keep telling myself it didn't happen. I just remember sitting down, putting my hands up. I don't know why. And Jay just took my t-shirt and you're like, let's go.
Oh, it was such a good day.
It was the anticipation that was built all the way around it.
Mate, I made flyers.
I can't imagine that you took much persuading to take your shirt off, did you, Craig?
No, none at all.
Flyers were so good.
Oh, we might have to post the flyer for this, actually. I've still got that.
We definitely have to post that flyer. We have to get that flyer. Anyway, moving on. So, got two there. Three. What's venue three?
The Fillmore in Philly.
Yes, that's such a good venue. I love that place. Venue. Yeah.
Great loading, great size stage, sounds great. Great dressing rooms. I would judge a venue by their shower.
Very important. Very important. That is something as well that the UK is severely lacking, is a good shower in a venue. The US has it down very, very well. A fucking great. Yeah, it's a great venue. The people who work in there are lovely as well.
Yeah, which makes a difference as well.
Absolutely.
House of Blues Anaheim.
Oh, I've not done that one. I've heard good things, though.
It's the longest push ever. I'm not joking. It's close to a mile.
Fuck. What? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, but they have loads of crew. They have loads of hands. And when you're in, it's great. And it's in California and the sun's always shining.
Yeah.
It sounds great. It's loud. It's like right in your face.
And to see Anaheim appears on like a lot of like the like Warped Tour style bands, like hardcore and punk tour schedules a lot as well. So the shows there must be fucking sick.
They are great. It's a big room too. And you get a skateboard if it sells out.
Oh, nice. That's pretty fucking cool.
That's an extra bonus. The fifth one, is where I was struggling, but now you put festivals in. I'm going to say Vainstream.
Oh, great show.
Good choice. Yeah.
Great festival. Kingstar, the people who put it on, always great. Alex, great.
Yep.
the whole festival's fun. It's nice that they'll hang dressing rooms because they're kind of away from everything. It's not that loud. There's always a bunch of friends on it.
Yeah.
That's always a massive plus to me with festival sites. Like, don't put me behind the fucking main stage all day long.
Yeah. I don't want my dressing room to vibrate.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And the windows shake on every kick drum.
Yeah. Oh. I would take it now in a heartbeat.
100%. Want that on my face right now. Just smashing my house windows.
Is that five? Yeah, that's five.
That's four. Awesome. That's four there, sir. Oh. That's, Coco, Vice Barden, House of Blues, and Vane Stream.
And Fillmore.
Oh, Fillmore, sorry. Fillmore. Yes, you are right. Yeah. Fillmore. Well, fucking hell, that was, smashed through him. Smashed through him.
Well, that wasn't too painful. That was great. Danny, I'm well impressed.
That's good going. And so next one.
What's our next one?
Top tip for touring. What piece of advice, which is actually probably quite a good one for you considering Sonic Workshops, what piece of advice would you give to someone who, let's say, is you at the start of your career, who's trying to get into it? What piece of advice would you get?
Okay. In my head, I was going to say, so if you're already on tour, like a top tip, and I was going to say, don't leave your bags everywhere.
That's great, yeah.
To get onto tour, get them back, like, reach out to people. Like, don't be afraid to send an email.
Yeah.
That's such a good piece of advice, yeah. Because, like, a lot of the time, like we said earlier, with, like, you know, getting endorsements, it is as simple as just fucking trying. Or hanging around the venue and making yourself useful when you can, being friendly and talking to people. And, you know, a lot of the time...
Don't be afraid to send an email to an extender. Don't be afraid to say hi at a gig.
Exactly.
If you want to be a sound engineer, go and say, talk to that sound engineer at a gig. He's more probably... 9 out of 10 times would be quite happy to talk to you.
Exactly. I've got friends of mine who got into touring as front of house engineers and monitor engineers by just going to gigs at like our local O2 Academy and talking to the technical manager or the front of house guy who was working that night and just doing it so often that eventually they went, do you know what, do you want to just come in and watch soundcheck and learn? Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, if you're keen, people will respect that and give you, yeah.
I think there's a difference between being keen and being a punisher, though. There's a very fine line.
Definitely not encouraging people just to be punishing at every show. Oh,
no. Don't come over my, like, with a beer in your hand. What is this I was like, talking about that, I've, like, obviously not wanting to learn sound, but someone so drunk that, you know, like, analog outboard gear, they just came and stood on top of my outboard compressors.
Brilliant.
The beer in the hand. I was like, what are you doing?
Just so they can see over. I love it.
I love that. Yeah. Shit-faced punters at the end of a gig as well, like, trying to help you load a trailer. It's like, just fuck
you're
off.
You're going
to
make this take longer.
You need to realise I am not your mate. I don't really give a fuck about you just because you like this band.
What is your can't live without item? What won't you go on tour without?
See, I want to say phone, but that's...
Well, that's fine.
Maybe not. Especially TMing. I could do a lot of work from my phone now.
Yeah.
Like, I could probably...
It's true. Yeah, very true.
Front of house, ring out.
Yeah.
Like, and I guess,
Oh, yeah, that's a great...
Is that too easy, though? Because obviously a phone is essential.
I was going to say, that was far too easy and unexciting.
I mean, mine was my printer, so I can't really say anything. But...
Yeah, you and Liam are in the same ballpark right about now.
What was yours?
Chewing gum.
He copied someone else, chewing gum. Yeah, you didn't even think of your own. Someone else said chewing gum. You went, yeah, chewing gum, that's mine.
Nothing wrong with that. I'm just learning. The entire purpose of this podcast is to steal everyone's best bits and their tricks. I'll be come back. I'll be like super TM.
You're going to go buy a phone now.
To-do list number one, buy a phone.
Yeah. Don't fucking talk to me about it. I actually got a new phone today and it's nearly gone out the window on multiple occasions.
What happened?
Shit. It's this new iPhone. I know. We're not going to go into it.
Honestly, we joined this call about 10 minutes before you joined, Danny, and he was trying to set it up then. And it was just 10 minutes of me sat in silence while he raged at his phone. It's like, this is great. I'm so glad I joined so early.
This is worth it.
Well, talking about great memories. What do you reckon is your best touring memory?
So I guess it needs a little backstory. So have you heard of the idea or the concept of Silvertooth?
I have.
No, but I'm assuming that it is a Silverstein and Beartooth crossover event.
Yes, and they're both on stage at the same time.
Sick.
Both bands play one song each. There are two drum kits, four cabs, two bass cabs, six vocals. They all have their own set of in-ears. That part of it is a nightmare, but it's fun. The show is fun. Yeah. And we sold T-shirts that were like, I can't remember what this, I think they were like the Black Flag Silvertooth T-shirt, and they sold a lot of money. I think we made like over 10 grand.
No way.
So we hired a boat in Southern California with an open bar and just went around the ocean for about 3 hours.
Oh my God. Like,
so good.
Couldn't really beat that, to be honest.
That's amazing.
That's amazing. I don't think anyone we asked that question is going to beat that fucking story now. That's incredible.
Whose idea was that? Was that just so that the guys could kind of split a set at a festival, or was it
It was Warped Tour.
Ah, cool. So
they were just drunk hanging out of the trailer and the idea came.
Yeah.
It actually happened 3 times. So twice was on one Warped Tour. The first time we didn't make T-shirts, and the second time on that Warped Tour, we did make T-shirts. We didn't make that much money, but we hired a limo and went out for pizza. And then the third one was 2 years later, mm-hmm. on Warped Tour. We made it like a bigger event. I think it was in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
It was huge. And like the whole Warped Tour kind of shut down to watch this. Like everyone put up signs and their tents and stuff being like, at Silvertooth, at Silvertooth. And
amazing.
It was an event.
Amazing.
Oh, that's
the production side of it was a nightmare.
Yeah, yeah, I can imagine, especially on a festival stage as well. Oh, like, yeah. Fucking nightmare. Absolutely nightmare. I've got a question for you actually about Warped Tour, because growing up, and I'm sure you're probably in the same position, growing up as a teenager looking at like Kerrang magazine and things, whenever Warped Tour came around, it just was like something I always aspired to go and experience. Unfortunately, never did, and it's now no longer a thing. But everyone that I've spoken to who has done it has been like, you're lucky, it's fucking horrible. Is that the case in your experience?
So, yeah. The first one I did, I hated.
Really?
And I think I hated it because I didn't have my expectations because of exactly that.
Yeah.
I grew up with it. All I wanted to ever do was go. I never thought that I'd have the opportunity to do the whole thing. Mm. So I was so excited about it. But it is brutal. It's like, yeah, 7 a.m., 6 a.m., wake up every day. You don't know what time you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
To like maybe like 9 o'clock, you get a schedule. You could be on in an hour. You could be on in 8 hours.
Fuck.
It's like 40 degrees. And the only AC you have is your bus.
Jesus.
You had a bus, not a bandwagon.
We were in a bandwagon. So, yeah.
Oh, I was gonna
say,
which
was fine. It had a shower, which was like a lifesaver.
Yeah.
But the second one I did, I don't know why I enjoyed it, because maybe I just went thinking I'd hate it and it beat that expectation. I didn't hate it, you know what I mean?
So how do they, like, it blows my mind that, like, how do they figure out the running order then? Like, and how do you, if you're getting a schedule at 9 a.m. to then go on stage at 10 a.m., manage to get the shit out of the trailer, across to a stage, set up, line checked, sound checked, or even if you get a sound check, and then go with a show? That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, so all the gear gets stored on one truck.
Okay.
We'll travel the truck, and that parks with the stage. And that's why you wake up at like 7 a.m. or 6 a.m. because you go to the truck and unload everyone's gear.
Right, okay.
But everyone's gear is kind of at the back of their stage under a little tent. And then if you're on in an hour, or if you're on in an hour and a half, sometimes it might be a little, maybe I'm exaggerating, an hour, but definitely not more than 2 hours sometimes.
That's savage.
You're just there. Your gear's already there on stage. You just push up.
So you just like, at 8 o'clock in the morning, you build all your gear, and then you might not even be on for like another 14 hours. Savage.
Yeah, or, which was the worst bit about it, if it's like somewhere in Florida and it's going to rain, you can't build all your gear because it's going to get soaked. So you kind of have to like protect it, and the rain's coming, a thunderstorm's coming, and like that side of it is I remember seeing a snake too. A snake ran under a drum kit, and I was just like, nope.
Fuck that.
Fucking hell. Yeah, it always looked so glamorous and, like, you know, just the epitome of, like, punk rock when I was a teenager. And I guess it kind of is in a way still, but, like, yeah.
It's definitely, I've met some great friends on that. Like, it's definitely, like, such a networking event, because there's what, like, yeah, 70 bands, yeah. And you go around all the different buses, you kind of hang out and you say hi and you meet different, so that side of it is definitely like punk rock summer camp.
Yeah, as it's always referred to, the punk rock summer camp. Wow.
Yeah,
that's an eye-opener, I think, for a lot of people who've never done it before. It's a bit of a challenge. Jesus.
Yeah, that's the way to put it. Yeah. Challenge.
So, like, moving to our last question for the, like, the talking touring questions is, like, the complete opposite. What's the worst memory you've had? Not necessarily like a fuck up or anything, but just a time that has just really not been fun on the road.
Yeah, I guess the time that comes to my mind is, so we were in Brazil, and again, I'm not going to mention any names. Mm-hmm. Someone lost their passport.
Oh, shit.
Oh, no.
So we went out to the bar. They must have had it in their pocket, either got some money out and it fell, or someone saw it and stole it. We all never know, yeah. I guess. And we get back to our hotel at like 2 a.m. maybe. And he's like emptying his pockets or whatever, and he's like, my passport's not here.
Fuck.
And I was just like, really? Like, you kidding me? Yeah, or like, yeah. What? And then, like, try and, like, find out if there is an embassy in that town or that city. I think we were in Sao Paulo, so a big city, so there was.
Yeah.
And it opened at 6 a.m. We were flying at 10, God. But it was somewhere else in Brazil.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, I wonder if you need your passport. And you did. Like, I found online that if you are a foreigner and you're traveling over a different state or province, where I'm not sure what they call it in Brazil, you do need a passport. So he needed it to get to that next show.
Fuck.
So 6 a.m., obviously I didn't sleep. We went to the embassy. We tried to figure it out. I think I got that flight at 10. I left him at the embassy. And then he sorted it out by like 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock that afternoon. Got a flight at 7,
yeah.
And arrived just before going on stage.
No way.
Fuck.
It was stressful, to say the least.
Yeah.
And obviously, I'm trying to stay calm,
yeah.
Because I don't want him to stress. And in my head, I'm obviously also very tired. Tired before it even started, because touring South America isn't the easiest,
no.
Or the one that you get the most sleep on.
No.
So, yeah. And it's a weird one, because it's not a bad memory.
It's one of those where, like, a terrible time that's, like, now is quite funny, I guess. You can laugh about it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the time's horrible. Not fun. I've had that before. Like, fortunately, only in the UK, got to Heathrow. I won't mention any names either, but got to Heathrow. I met the band at the airport. And I'm sure you do the same thing. You go around everyone. Just like, right, give me your passports. I go to the counter and I do everything. I go around everyone and the singer goes, oh, shit. Oh, fuck. It's not... I've not got it. And also, I'd had them picked up at their like start point and dropped to the airport. And I was like, okay, I'll ring the guy with the van, rang him, he pulled over. He was like, no, there's nothing in here. And he's like, oh, the only other place I could have left it is in the Uber that I got to, like, the rehearsal studios. It left it in the fucking Uber. And obviously that's, I think, was in like Wales or something. And we're at fucking Heathrow. I just had to leave him there. Basically, he's like, right, well, we're all going to get on this flight. Here's a band card.
See you
in America. Like, rang the manager and was like, right, I'm about to board this flight. This guy is not. Can you rebook a flight for him, please, for today?
Yeah.
And let me know when he's going to arrive and I'll sort out a pickup. It was horrible at the time, but yeah, like, afterwards, it was like quite funny.
Yeah, I guess the difference of it being a bad memory or not is that if it was you,
oh, yeah.
Then that would be a bad memory.
Oh, but God,
it's,
yeah.
That it's someone else and you're still having to deal with it, still makes it, obviously makes it hard. But
yeah, I have once forgotten the carné, left it at my house and got all the way to London and realised that I got it with me and had to turn around again.
I got my certificate of location today, just so you all know. I had the HMRC chasing down my business for proof of location of some items, because when it was stamped back into Europe from Istanbul, they hadn't registered it on the computer or something like that. So my carnet was all up to date. That had all been handed in. And they've been chasing me for like 6 months being like, we need this. And I was battling with them being like, but you've got it. It's all done properly. And I finally got a certificate today to say that it's all in the UK. And I'm not going to get in about 26 grand's worth of trouble. Whee!
So like somebody else's mistake caused you so much trouble.
And like so much, and that's one thing, just like my thought with that is so many people scared about carnets at the moment is like, you can do it so well, but just keep an eye on it at all times is what yeah. I've learned from that. Like carnets are so fucking important.
Always assume that the immigration, or sorry, no, the customs officer that you're dealing with doesn't know what the fuck they're doing, because yeah. a lot of the time they don't really, especially when it comes to a carnet, because it's such like a specific piece of paperwork that they don't yeah. see every single day.
Well, yeah, you'll do it soon, won't they? Thanks, Brexit.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
just to close us up, Danny, I've got it written here. Like you're one of the nicest people I've met on tour, and when you've got a crazy schedule, sleepless nights, and then one disaster after another on a shitty shit like tour, and it's just rubbish. How do you keep like mentally? How do you keep positive on tour when you're away for so long?
That is a hard question. I guess just I'm doing what I love. That's what I wanted to do, music, ever since I was like 15.
Yeah.
I kind of take a step back and be like, I'm here doing this.
Absolutely.
Everyone, every job has its hard
yeah.
bits,
yeah.
no matter how glamorous touring could be, I guess. People always think, oh, you tour with bands? Oh, it must be like, so like, it definitely has its
yeah.
hard and tough
yeah.
and everything.
Absolutely, yeah.
But at the end of the day, not to diss anyone that's doing it, but I'm not doing a 9-to-5 ringing people up or like that would, I think, hurt yeah. me more.
I couldn't agree more. It's so important yeah. doing what we do to take a step back and realize how lucky we can be, I guess.
Yeah. There's definitely times in like, you said earlier, like, I think times of like, I remember being in Sydney with Beartooth and like the sold out show, stepping back and being like, holy crap. Mm-hmm. Like I'm on the other side mm-hmm. of the world.
Yeah.
To however many people, it doesn't really matter how many people, it could yeah. be 5 people here, but I'm still at the other end of the world mixing. Yeah. That's crazy.
It's insane, yeah. isn't it? I remember like the first time I went to Japan, I was in Tokyo and got into my hotel room and I just sat and looked out the window for probably like half an hour, just like, this is
yeah.
I'm here. Like, yeah, this is yeah. real. Someone has paid me money and paid yeah. me to travel to this place.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane.
Yeah, it's not even that I'm just here mixing someone's face.
yeah. yeah, I think that's it. I think it's really good to remind yourself of that. Like Tom Campbell said it on when we had him on his episode of this podcast, where like you're in a very privileged position in that you're traveling the world on someone else's credit card.
Yeah,
which is an amazing thing. Like
a crazy way to put it, but absolutely,
but it's an experience in that you know very very few people get to have in their life. Which is
so if ever I'm feeling down, I guess I just think that and be like, everything's okay. Yeah.
It could always be worse. You could be back in Subway.
Exactly. Oh, that brings back.
Annie, thank you so much for joining us on Talking Touring, mate. It's been such a pleasure to have you on here and chatting to us about all the things you've got going on. And I can't wait to see you in real life as soon as possible. You beautiful man.
Yeah, I can't wait to see you in a field somewhere.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, you'd actually yeah. meet and hang out and have a beer. That'd be nice.
Yeah. Thank you for having me, guys. It's been
great. Thank you for coming on. It's great to meet you, man. Yeah. Great to hear some stories.
Hey, next time we get to do a bus tour together, can we share a bunk?
Has to be one of those big double bunks at the front of the bus.
No chance.